Hey, you're listening to episode number 21 of the Obsessive Creative Podcast. This is a community of relentless creators. And here we talk about what it's like to be compelled and obsessed to create work that matters. I'm your host, Luke Cleland, and you can stay up to date on all things obsessive and creative by following me on Instagram at Luke W.T. Cleland. Let's get into the show. Okay, so today I'm really excited to share with you a conversation I had with Antonia Akai Casuccio. She is the owner and designer behind The Loved One. She makes modern heirlooms for those looking to get married. She does beautiful work. And I'm really excited for you to hear a little bit about her background and how she came into starting her own business and the creative journey that brought her there.
Well, it probably started in childhood. I was one of those weird little kids who collected rocks and shells and feathers, and I picked up many dead animals because I was fascinated by them. And I made things with them, not so much the dead animals, because those got thrown in the fireplace by family members to protect me from myself. But I started making things with the things I would collect, and it's pretty much all based on nature. You know, like things that you find. Feathers particularly. I grew up on a farm in England, and, you know, pheasants would be hunted and plucked by family members, and I would save every single feather that was plucked off a pheasant, because I don't know if you've ever seen pheasant feathers. They're beautiful. But anyway, so the rocks, I realized that you could make jewelry out of rocks. And I started doing that when we came to Canada. I was probably in grade 5, and I bought some jewelry findings at a flea market with my parents were there and bought them for me. And I started making jewelry, brought it to school, and kids bought it. Which, I mean, oh, bless their little hearts.
Did you go in like, oh, I'm going to sell this? Or they were like, oh, I like that. Can I buy that from you?
I don't remember. I honestly don't remember. But I remember writing up, and this is, I'm aging myself now, but this is in the days way prior to computers. So, you know, I manually wrote up a little catalog and drew pictures of each jewelry piece. They're like, there was no Illustrator, InDesign, or Photoshop. Yeah. So I drew everything, hand wrote it with the prices, and kids bought it, which, go figure. So fast forward, you know, many, many years later, and shopping for my wedding 13 years ago, there was just no options that I thought were suitable. The only things I liked were so far out of my price range. The options for accessories and even gowns offered in the bridal stores back in the time were dismal. They were traditional, they were uninspiring, and I started flirting with the idea of creating a unique bridal store. And at the time, I really wanted to do gowns. That hasn't been set aside entirely. That may happen at some point, we'll see. So I started flirting with the idea and researching. So when I launched The Loved One in 2012 on Valentine's Day, it was accessories and it was other people's designs. So I sourced people's work who I really liked, and started with that. And then when I still couldn't find what I really, really liked, I started making it myself. A lot of trial and error. There's a lot of failed projects in a box at home. And a lot of things have been pulled apart for parts. But I started designing my own pieces about 3 years after that, when I realized I just wasn't seeing what I wanted to see in the market. And that's how The Loved One came about.
And how did you think that you could just start designing jewelry? Did you just be like, this is what I want, I'm just going
to
make it?
I'm just going to try to make it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I owe YouTube a great deal of thanks for certain tutorials on things. But my background is fashion design in terms of schooling. So I had a really good knowledge of history of fashion. I've always been inspired by couture. And I've always been able to make things. So I just tried.
So you were good with working with your hands, or
yeah,
like had kind of a skill of like being able to do things.
Yes.
So then you're like, okay, I can do this.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of it was looking at pictures and trying to figure out how things were made. And you know, I didn't, and I don't ever want to copy other people's work. But I certainly look to other people's work as points of inspiration and then try to figure out how I can make it different and how I can do my own, not even a version of it, like how I can just take that one thing, like say a flower, and make the loved one version of that so that it feels very different and it doesn't look derivative to someone else's work.
Yeah. Where do you find, like, do you have like a big source of inspiration in general?
Or couture, like, actually, high fashion. I've always loved it. I was 11, I think, when I got my first subscription to Vogue. I was that kid, and I had a, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of fashion, and probably still do a little bit. So I look to, you know, Alexander McQueen and Iris van Herpen and John Galliano, Vivian Westwood, like the designers that really inspire me. I look to them to see what they're doing, and you know, not that it translates directly, because it doesn't, but I definitely find inspiration there.
And why, do you know why you found them inspiring? Like, why, like, what about them did you really, like, feel like they connected to you?
I think a lot of it is historical reference, but made modern. So, you know, for a perfect example would be Vivian Westwood's use of corsets. You know, she uses them a lot in her designs, and they are beautiful, but they don't feel like you're wearing a costume. They feel like something new and modern and edgy. So that's sort of the first example that comes to mind. But yeah, there's a lot of historical reference used in couture, and I think I love that knowledge of, oh, that's referencing something from the 1700s, or that's referencing something Victorian, but it feels very new and interesting. And I love that.
So tell me a little bit more about, like, the space in between. So you said, like, you had education and then you got married. What happened in between?
A lot of work. So I worked in display merchandising and retail design for many, many years. I started at Holt Renfrew as part of the display team, and I learned so much there. I mean, we were installing, back in the day, there were huge budgets for display. So we had carte blanche in the windows, which was very exciting.
Was that here in Toronto?
Was here in Toronto, yeah. That was at the Bloor Street store. And then from there, I was dating an architect who was doing his master's down in Southern California at SciArc, which is the Southern California Institute of Architecture. And we wanted to be together. So I was like, how can I move to Southern California? And you know, through connections, it turned out that Club Monaco, which was Canadian owned at the time, was buying back their franchise stores, and they had four of them in Southern California at the time, and they needed someone to bring them back up to corporate standards. So that was me. So I ended up spending 4 years in living in Venice Beach, overseeing visuals for Southern California for Club Monaco. And that was a lot of merchandising. It was display. It was very exciting, but it was a whole different discipline than what I'd been doing at Holt, which was strictly dressing mannequins, building displays, making props. So it was a different discipline, but still related. Then I moved back from Southern California in the dead of winter, which one wonders, to launch Urban Outfitters into Canada. And that was really fun. And you, at the back at that time, we built everything. We built it, we painted it, we had a full wood shop down in the basement of the store, and just literally constructed everything you saw to house the product. And that was fun. From there, you know, I could go on, but you know, I ended up spending a year in New York overseeing visuals for Old Navy, and then did Anthropologie's launch into Canada, and they have, they're the same company as Urban Outfitters, and yeah, so I've had a really interesting, I guess, professional career, and I really value it. I don't regret any of it at all. You know, in between there's been some freelance jobs redesigning. Like I worked on the redesign of the Umbra store down at Queen and John. So that was fun. So that was all, you know, working on floor plans and designing fixtures and, you know, again, different discipline, but all sort of related back to retail.
Wow. So what was it? I guess you can kind of span this question across, like, now and then. Like, I'm guessing you're working on with teams, lots of people, sounds like you had different how has the creative kind of community, whether it's been at work or now when it's related to your work, how has that kind of affected you?
I mean, I guess there's positives and negatives to it. I mean, there's definitely, you know, times when you see work that other people have done and you're just like, oh my God, I'll never be that good. And it becomes a bit self-defeating. But at the same point, I find, especially in the wedding industry, I find people really support each other. And it's really lovely. I think what I enjoy the most is the collaboration. So a photographer decides to create a shoot and you bring in hair, you bring in makeup, you bring in styling, you bring in, you know, all these different elements and florals and set design, and all of these creatives come together to create something really beautiful, and you all benefit from that. And I've made so many friends really specifically through this industry, through the wedding industry, through collaboration. And I love that. And I think in terms of creative community, it can be so supportive. I think the trick is not to let it get the better of you, which I think we've all done that from time to time.
Yeah.
And sort of being like, oh my God, that's so good, I'll never be that good, or I'll never be able to make anything that beautiful, or, you know, but that's, you know, that's my own personal demons. That's not necessarily the creative community, but I know I'm not alone in feeling that as well. So,
what was it like so you mentioned like the wedding industry and collaboration. Like, when I think of like having budgets to do like, you know, visuals at Anthropologie or Urban Outfitters, that seems like, wow, the dream. Like, that's like amazing. Like, what was it like? What was it like? Like, I guess working with other people on like a corporate level in creativity, because it seems like those are like unicorns. Like, you don't necessarily see a ton of large companies that have such big creative like weight. So what was that like?
When you're working for a corporation, at the end of the day, the goal is to sell product, but to do it in a way that creates a beautiful experience for the client. And I think Anthropologie particularly did that so very well. And surprisingly, we did not have a large visual budget at Anthropologie. Like, we often went out and dumpster dived for stuff, for supplies. You know, we found rope in an alleyway and came back with yards and yards and yards of this really thick rope, and used it in display. So there's a lot of found things. We also relied a lot on interns, which is fun because you're teaching people what you know, which is also interesting. So the collaboration and the creativity comes through being a teacher and learning as you teach. So you kind of get the benefit of both, which is really lovely. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic working for a corporation and being creative. It's very lucky. It's a very unique experience, but the end goal is to increase sales, but to create a good customer experience while you're doing that. So it's kind of a balance of commerce and passion.
That's so interesting that you said they didn't have like massive budgets, because it's like, oh wow, like that, I feel like that is such a lesson for like anyone like that wants to do something creative. It's like, oh well, they probably have huge budgets, oh they probably like have all these things, but like you're saying, like you still like went and found rope like in the dumpster,
in an alleyway.
Like it's more about like your vision and what you can like
create,
be resourceful.
Nothing.
Absolutely. So one of the best examples of that is we were making flowers out of plastic water bottles. And part of it was a statement about, you know, the plastic water bottle scourge that it is. But another part of it was creating something beautiful out of discard, like trash, basically. So we asked all of the staff to save every single water bottle, wash them, bring them in, and we literally had hundreds. Like we started this 3 months prior. We knew we were going to do it. And then we cut them, we spray painted them, and we created flowers, and we did this massive window installation with flowers made from spray painted cut up plastic water bottles.
That's crazy.
It's crazy, but it cost us nothing.
Wow.
It cost us time.
Wow. And do you think that really, it seems like it translated into doing your own company. You're like, oh, like I've seen what this takes on a corporate level. Like I could do this. Like,
absolutely. It's, like, yeah, absolutely.
It's just like, what can I envision? Like, what can I like be resourceful in with what I have and like just
very
do it.
Very much so.
Yeah. Running your own business, as you know, being an entrepreneur, it kind of forces creativity. You have to make do with what you have. It's not like I can call a display company in New York and say I need 20 of these because I literally don't have the budget for that. So how can I get the effect that I want using what I have or what I can source locally or very inexpensively?
That's amazing. What do you think is like good like jewelry design, like when you like see something in your own terms, like
in my own,
what does it
terms?
Mean for it to be like good?
I want it to feel interesting and unique, and I want it to bring the wearer joy. So if I have an emotional response to something, I'm assuming I'm not the only person that will have that response. If I have no emotional response to it, I'm not interested. So that to me, and I know that's a very vague, random answer, but I need to sort of feel something when I look at it. You know, there's so much out there that's just mediocre. It's just, and I actually don't really wear accessories. I wear my engagement ring. I wear them to events because I feel like I have to. But I love them, and I love what they can do for people. It's the icing on the cake, you know. And I think in terms of the process of planning a wedding, accessories are generally the last thing on people's minds. And then a month before a wedding, I'll get a call or an email and say, you know, I really think I should wear something with my dress, you know, and all that stuff is taken into account. And then the accessories are a bit of an afterthought. But if it takes you from feeling like this to elevating your sense of, you know, image that day, then I think that's a wonderful thing. And I think that the accessory, whatever it may be, whether it's a crown or just a little necklace or whatever, has accomplished its goal.
Where do you think you learned that like feeling thing?
I think dressing mannequins, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, I think dressing mannequins, because you can put the most beautiful outfit on a mannequin, and then the second you add like one little thing, whether it's a pair of earrings or whatever it might be, or a stack of bangles up an arm, like just something fabulous just takes it from, you know, an 8 to a 10.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's my limited understanding of, like, even accessories, right? It's like, oh, like, you may not think it needs something, but then when you do add it, it's like, oh, now it's complete, right? Like, it is the complete, like,
yeah,
picture.
It's just a little bit extra, and I, you know, I see it when I have clients come into the showroom, and, you know, we'll hold things up or they'll try things on, and the second they put on the right thing, their face changes. The expression on their face changes, and they feel, you can tell that they feel really good. And that's why I do it. It just feels amazing. And, you know, to hear people say, you know, I wanted one of your pieces because it doesn't feel like anyone else's. And that's like, okay. Job done. Yes. And that's really satisfying. And it just, you know, it's not saving the world, but it's bringing joy to people in a small way. And being part of someone's wedding day is, you know, regardless of whether it's a little hairpin or whatever it is, it's a real honor to just be a part of, you know, what's going to be one of the most important days of their lives. It's really nice. I mean, you must feel that as a photographer, as someone chooses you to photograph their wedding day. What an honor that is.
Yeah, it's that's what we say too. It's like, this is such a, like, in some ways so strange, because you bring, like, this stranger into your life to be, like, with you all day.
It's so, it's such an intimate process.
Yeah, and in terms of accessories, it's like, it's gonna be part of, like, what they look at. Like, you're in that, like, your work is in that image. Like,
yes, it
in
is.
In all of them, forever.
Forever.
Like, yeah, and so, you know, I want to sort of strive to create something timeless that people aren't going to look back on in 10 years and go, oh my God, I can't believe I wore that. So it's interesting. And I mean, I'm sure it's the same for you in terms of photography and style. You don't want to go so trendy that it just feels so of its era that it's going to date or wear poorly in 10 years, you know, and or whatever, 20 years. I think it's fun to find the challenge in creating something that feels ageless and timeless, but still feels relevant and current. So it's these are these little challenges I set for myself.
So, like, okay, for someone that is, like, facing the beginning of a creative journey that they want to, like, oh, they had this idea that they want to, like, go into, which is similar to something like you did maybe, you know, back when you were getting married and you're like, oh, there's nothing like this. And then you face this, like, oh, I have this idea. Like, how do I go into that? What's one of the big things that you've learned maybe about yourself, about your own creativity through this process of creating the loved one?
I mean, there's definitely a fear of failure and getting it wrong. What I've learned through the process is that it's actually okay to make mistakes and just learn from them, so long as you're evolving in the process and so long as you get a lesson from whatever failure it might be and make it better. So there's been a lot of that. The business has evolved significantly from the start of it. I've also learned that my quest for perfection holds me back a lot, and sometimes what I deem to be not perfect, other people are like, that is really beautiful. And I'm like, but it needs blah, blah, you know, whatever it happens to be. And other people's perceptions of things that I make are very different from my own perception, where I'm seeing everything that's wrong with it. People only see a beautiful piece. And I have learned to sort of let it go or step away from things for a few days and come back to them and look at them with fresh eyes, as opposed to just sit there and fuss about it until it's, you know, so overwrought and tortured that you don't want it anymore. You don't have that luxury in a corporate world because you have timelines and you have to get things done. You know, I try to work with brides well in advance of their wedding, so we have the opportunity to go back and forth and say, you know, have her say, oh, I want a few more flowers, I want a few more crystals, and I can come back and say, you know, I tried this, here's a picture of it, I don't think it's quite right, what do you think of this? And then so it's collaborative again.
Yeah.
And I know I keep coming back to that, but I really feel that the collaboration aspect of it, whether it's with other creatives in the wedding community or with a bride coming up with a one-of-a-kind piece, or like a custom piece, is I feel that there's a lot of freedom in that. Because you feed off other people's ideas, and that's really fun and takes you to a place that you not necessarily have gone to by yourself.
If you'd like to learn more about Antonia's work, you can find more about her at thelovedone.ca and on Instagram under thelovedone. Thank you so much for listening this week. I hope each episode encourages you to lean into who you are as a creative and do work that matters. And if you love the podcast, I would love so much if you left a review. It really helps so much in the algorithms of being seen in the podcast world. And I would love to be able to share this with as many people as possible. So if you do have a moment, it would be amazing if you left us a nice little 5-star review. And until next week, stay obsessed.